This is the Takeaway Weekender. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and this is a real chance to go long and linger on some of our most provocative conversations. A new film this week gave us a chance to look at how young lives can change in an instant.
I was a waitress and a bartender at a pizzeria place and a hostess at Mamacita's.
I'd never been on a plane before.
I needed some way to escape somehow. And I found an ad on Craigslist. It was under TV shows and radio jobs. It didn't hit me until I got on the plane.
That's from the new Netflix documentary Hot Girls Wanted, about how young women find themselves in the amateur porn world after being lured online to a life of celebrity and freedom that soon fades. This collision of young people and pornography online is something many of you have been preparing for and talking about already with your kids, and we loved what you had to say.
This is Patrick from Boston. And while my kid's far shy of 16, I plan to discuss masturbation and the viewing of pornography from a logical standpoint. Pretending it's sinful or doesn't happen, or, far worse, is a sign of depravity, is hypocritical and counterproductive.
This is Heidi calling from Minneapolis. I'll say to my 2 and 5-year-old sons that when they're of porn viewing age, what you see in porn is nothing like real sex. Always ask for verbal consent and focus on your partner's satisfaction. It's that simple.
Thanks, Heidi and Patrick. But filming a group of kids who disappear online into this porn world was anything but simple for Jill Bauer and Ronna Gratis, the directors of Hot Girls Wanted. Rashida Jones is one of the producers. They were looking for candid conversations with young women, their parents and boyfriends, about something that in many of the scenes has become no big deal.
This whole film, actually, the genesis of this film was that Ronna and I had an argument about the girls, because we said, Ronna was saying, who are the girls? Who are the girls? They look like the girl next door. They look like they've just graduated from high school. And so I said, well, when you're 18, you know what you're doing. And she said, are you kidding? Who were you when you were 18? I was a very different 18-year-old than most. She was not that girl.
So you could see yourself stepping across that line, but you couldn't see yourself.
I mean, never doing anything quite extreme, personally. But, I mean, I definitely knew 18-year-olds who would have done something like that and who would later probably live to regret it. And so I was just, right, Jill and I were sort of having it out, and I said, oh, are you kidding me? So many people make these choices without thinking 2 steps ahead.
Right. So when we walked out of the house after the first day of shooting, I looked at Ronna and I said, I hate to say this, but you're right. You were right.
Okay, Jill, what did you learn about the girls who were entering this industry?
They just graduated high school. This was a free ticket out of their small towns. It was quick money. They don't have a lot of opportunities. They're not on the college track. They're generally, if they would go to college, they'd be first generation, you know, kids who would go to college. So this was just opportunity and freedom and money, money and freedom, sort of the same.
Could you have imagined the option for someone of your generation, of your peer group? Or do you think it's changed significantly between the time you were in high school and these girls are in high school?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a perfect storm of accessibility. And then also, you know, as Rashida was saying, this backdrop of our culture that sort of supports, you know, this idea that sex is no big deal and everyone's having it, so you might as well get paid for it.
You can watch it. I can't tell you how much this film has affected me. I just can't really fathom the extent to which this is just a click away. And there's a point at which you watch the film and you go, oh, this is an outrage. This is exploitation. This is horrible. This is awful. But then you see these girls being girly and they've got this kind of support group that's bizarre. And but, you know, maybe this is the way the world is right now. I couldn't resolve those. Rashida, do you understand what I'm talking about?
I do. I mean, I think that's part of the power of the film is that, you know, I think there's an expectation that the girls who decide to go into porn are broken and they're from broken homes and they're going to fill some hole in their heart and they're not going to be able to do it. But the truth is, these girls are normal and they are like us and they do have supportive families and supportive boyfriends and they feel like this is a good choice. And in part because of the backdrop, the cultural backdrop, and in part because, you know, it's so easy to do. And there is sort of like this disconnection from how you're feeling about being sexy and having sex and actually having sex for a living, because they're very, very different things. But I think that's the point of the film, is that there's a normalcy about this that in itself is should be looked at.
One of the girls in the film, in an extraordinarily affecting moment, says, "I'm going to own this. I'm going to own it. I'm doing everything. I'm owning it." And you know, she's very convincing. She also feels like a victim. But there's also something. And I grew up in the '70s. You know, she's expressing a power that comes directly out of some strange notion of feminism, and it's all kind of mixed together, and that's where the lightning kind of goes right down my spine, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I watching here? Did you feel that?
Absolutely. I mean, they go back to the house, and it's a little bit of a sorority, and they boost each other up. You know, they've just done something that in many cases is tough to take. It's harsh. It's very hard work. They work very hard, you know, when they shoot these scenes. And then they go back and they're very supportive and they say, "I feel empowered." And so they kind of, there's this mantra, this kind of speak, you know. And look, there are certainly women who are making porn who are, you know, it is empowering them and it works for them. And, you know, sex is a very nuanced topic and so is pornography. And so, you know, we're not here as anti-pornography people, you know, saying this is bad. We're just, you know, we captured one particular part of the industry, professional amateur porn. And, you know, this is what we saw. We saw the girl sort of, you know, talking this talk. And then, you know, it would sort of devolve, generally speaking.
The guy, why did he let you film him?
Riley, the agent.
Yeah.
When we met him, he had been in business for, I think, just 2 or 3 months. So he was brand new to the world of professional amateur porn. And he actually is quite similar to a lot of the girls. He comes from sort of the same socioeconomic background. And I think he, like them, feels very, you know, in control of his life. He's found this way to make money and to be independent and to live in a 5-bedroom house. And I think a lot of it was just pride.
Pretty much in a year, I went from a dishwasher loser working at Outback to living in Miami Beach in a 5-bedroom house with my own car. I just drive my girls to and from shoots. They pay rent. And I make good money.
He was, you know, very proud of this sort of empire he was building and let us in. And also when we approached him, we, you know, he said, "Well, you know, what are you doing?" And we said, "Well, I don't think anyone really knows about this world and you're new to it. We'd like to explore it and we don't have an agenda going in. We just really want to figure it out because it seems to be a real phenomenon."
Who had the guts to ask that guy, well, what is the shelf life of the women?
Oh, I was not a scary question at all. I mean, that's the thing is everyone we met was so open about their choice to work in this profession.
Were you surprised when he said a year tops?
We had been learning that at that point, so that was really just confirmation, and it was really helpful to get that confirmation from a man working in the industry because they have staying power, so they really watch the cycle of the girls, you know, happen every day.
There's a girl in the film, a blonde. She's from Washington State, I believe.
Yeah.
She's got a nose ring.
Yeah.
And she says something.
Carly.
Carly, yes. I may get this quote wrong, but she says something like, "I never have sex except in porn."
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Explain what was going through your mind when she said that, and what you learned about her, and just how she's grown up.
Well, that actually wasn't that surprising because several girls that we met had only had one or two sexual partners before getting into pornography. And in a funny way, I mean, it was sort of, we had done a lot of research going into the film, so we've read up on hookup culture a lot. And hookup culture, sex is no big deal, and it seems like a lot of girls and boys are not really getting what they want, and they can get hurt very easily, and they feel like it's not okay to express that you want something more than a hookup. So a lot of these girls, in a very ironic way, sort of felt like porn was a safe place to have sex.
An upgrade,
because number one, you're getting paid, and then number two, they said, there's no pretense. I know I'm going to have sex with this guy, and it's a job, and he's not going to lie to me, and he's not going to pretend that he likes me. So everything is just totally straightforward, and you're less likely to get emotionally hurt.
And that's what Carly says.
Yep.
But then she sort of talks like, a character out of a Broadway musical by saying, oh, but when I meet somebody who I like, I get really nervous.
Yeah, they're still sweet. Little girls at the end. You know, that's, yeah.
So then you look at this film, Rashida, and you say, all right, what's going on here is, again, very upsetting, but it's an attempt to redesign the imperfect relationship culture that exists for teenagers, that hurts them, that it has its own problems, the clearly problematic parental kid sex education paradigm, which doesn't apparently work, that these kids are on their own trying to redesign how I'm going to learn about sexuality, and on some crazy level, they're succeeding. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah. I'm not sure, but the thing is, I don't even think it's designed by them. I think that you could say they're either benefiting or being hurt by something that's been designed for them. I mean, it's not even, you know, they're not the people who run the business. They're not the people who decide, who make the rules. They're just the people who are influenced by and enjoy or are harmed by what's already been created. You know, I think actually, you know, the argument is that porn is adult entertainment. Okay, that's fine, but unfortunately, you know, the average age is in the movie that somebody watches their first porn is 11. So whether or not it's designed as entertainment, it's being used as education. And so I don't think there's really...
This is an issue in my house.
Yeah.
Believe me, all my kids' friends, you know where to go and know how to do it. And I say all my kids' friends as though my kids don't, but we've had the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 13s and 16s. It is not anything that has even a remote relationship to the solar system I grew up in. Does it to you? Porn at 11?
No, I just think, like, thank God it was not accessible, like, in the way that it is now, because I know that my friends and I would have Googled like crazy and probably been, like, we would not have stopped at the first click. We would have kept going. So I just, and then to see some of, like, the very violent imagery or very coercive, you know, storylines of these videos would have been incredibly confusing. And, right, it doesn't really lay the groundwork to learn about making love. I mean, that doesn't really ever enter the equation on your average site.
What do you think the future is for some of the characters that are so vivid in this film?
We've been asked that. I mean, it's so unclear. You know, so far, they're all doing fine. Just psychologically, how are they going to do, and how are they going to process what they've done?
I'm not asking a clinical question. I'm just saying, what the hell is going to happen?
Well, yeah. You know, they still don't come from worlds. When you were talking about the socioeconomics of it and that it's an economic problem, that it really is. You know, they're just not given opportunities. I mean, our main character in the film, Tressa, is she's happy. She's with her boyfriend, but, you know, she's a hostess at a restaurant.
she's a manager now, excuse me. She's a manager at a restaurant in Texas. And she had dreams, you know, she wanted more. And she chose love over freedom, you know. But it's really sad to see these girls and to know that they actually have to make that choice. You know, it would be really nice to know that they could have both.
Yeah, and actually, Rachel, the other main character, has a lot more fire in her belly, and she just sort of lacked opportunities, which is why she went on Craigslist, answered this ad, got into porn. But I think she's really going to ride this experience because now, you know, she'll be a face of the film, and I think she's a girl that, given opportunity, is going to totally run with it.
So, I mean, it seems to me that what the industry you're portraying here is protected by the U.S. Constitution.
Absolutely.
It fits into a giant sort of panorama of highly sexualized and commodified female culture in America. I get the sense there's no fix here. This is the way the world is.
I mean, the only federal regulation is that a girl has to be 18. And that is it. And I don't know about a fix, but I think there definitely needs to be a conversation about catching up with the internet and addressing the fact that the industry has changed so much because of it, so that, you know, new sort of safety measures need to be put into place.
Jill Bauer and Rana Gratis are the directors of Hot Girls Wanted, which debuted on Netflix this week. The film is produced by Rashida Jones. We wanted to learn even more about this world, and so we reached out to 19-year-old Rachel, one of the girls in the film, and she quite candidly told a story of survival in a world that's just a click away on your computer, a world of meaningless sex, cheap celebrity, and glitter for people who believe they have no options. And Rachel started by describing the way the definition of a porn star has changed over the years.
I think the standards and the lines have been blurred a little bit for what technically a porn star could be in these days, because me, I could walk down the street and look completely normal and no one would ever guess, because I don't, you know, I don't really fit the classic role, like big fake boobs and all that stuff. But that's exactly how it's turning into. It's turning younger and it's turning innocent, and it's like the image of a hot girl can be absolutely anything. And you don't technically have to be perfect to be in porn. You can be anybody. Anybody who has a knack or a look or whatever. Whatever they think they can use, they'll take.
And hot girl means girl next door. Someone you could have, that kind of idea.
Exactly. I would say so.
Mm-hmm. How old are you?
I'm 19 now, but when I started, I was 18.
18. And how hard is this work? I mean, exhausting.
The physical work, I would say extremely hard, because that's just not humanly, really, to be having sex like that or that often or that vigorously or with that many different people. Like, it's just not supposed, like, we weren't brought here on this earth really to do that. We were supposed to, you know, one person, have babies, whatever, and that's it. So the fact that we're just doing this just because there's money involved and whatever, it's extremely, it takes a toll on your body. Hard, hard, hard.
And how do you deal with that?
I used to just deal with it by taking maybe a week off and then going back. But then it's like it'll double your pain. Like, if you try and go for a week, let's say they book you 5 days in a row, that's 5 days. By the end of that, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm dead. All right, I'm going to take off for a week, and then you're going to go back, and then you're dead again. Like, for half the month, you're just, it sucks. Like, you can't do anything. Like, there's no room for a normal relationship, because you can't even have sex after you get off of a set or, you know, go home after a trip. Like, you're messed up. You have to go to the doctor every 2 weeks to figure out what's wrong with you, to get some type of antibiotic, some medication to, like, get you back on track. And then it's messed up instantly right after that. So that was the worst part for me, like, not being able to be healthy, because you were never healthy.
You're scaring me.
I know. It was hard. It was very hard. Very hard for girls, mostly. Like, guys, yeah, stuff happens, but it's just like such a harsh thing for a young girl to like try and take on all of that repetitively.
What would you describe, thinking back, as the moment, the exact moment when you crossed the line that you couldn't go back over?
As in?
Anything. Just any. I mean, you know, parents are going to have one way of thinking of that. You know, Sunday school teachers are going to have another way of thinking about that. But what do you think is the, now I'm there. Now I've crossed something.
Like right when I probably started feeling like comfortable, like when I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is my job. I go to work every day, take my clothes off. They take pictures of me, whatever. I do all this stuff. And it's normal. I talk about it to people like it's normal. People call me by Ava, and that's not even my name. It's normal. Like, just all this stuff that barely anybody experiences in a normal day-to-day life, it was turning into just, you know, wake up, work, go to sleep. It was just like a job. And then once I got too comfortable with that, then I started thinking about it, and I was like, This isn't really what I should be doing or who I should be. I can't make it just like I'm Rachel. And then this whole Ava was taking over. Like it was just like that was the new me. But then I was losing myself. I was losing the normal like Rachel who grew up in Oswego, you know, has all her friends back at home. Like I was losing touch with that and gaining touch with a bunch of stuff that was not technically who I wanted to be or anything that I was interested in was not what I was interested in when I was doing that. So it was just like I was confused.
And as far as parents, family in Oswego goes, when was the first time you went back and had some sort of, here's the news.
Yeah, it was more like I never wanted them to find out, but once I came back from Miami the first time, I was talking to one of my friends about it, and I hadn't told anyone that I was doing that before that, but I thought it was normal, so I can go back home and talk about it like it's normal, but the people back at home didn't see it as normal because they went to high school with me, you know, they saw me at prom, they saw me walking down the hallways, they never expected it. So it just blew up. The news just traveled through the high schools, both high schools. I never knew anybody from one of the high schools in the town, and they all know me now. So it was just, like, shocking.
So that big mistake there, yeah.
That it was my fault that it leaked into my town because I thought I could tell one person and they wouldn't say anything. But that turned out to be false. So it spread. And then someone had sent a picture to my parents, and then that's how my parents found out. And from that point on, I was just telling them that I was doing something else every time I would travel, which seems very naive of them to believe me after they found out that I was already doing that. But parents trust, you know, it can either go a long way or not. So it was going a long way at that point, but when I was still in it, I felt bad. I felt terrible for lying to my parents. And then my brothers and sisters had the shock waves go through them. And then people in school would, you know, go to them about it. Like, oh, I hear your sister's doing this and that. And then when I started hearing that, I was like, man, like, do I really want that image? Like, do I want that to be me? Like, I'm their sister. I'm supposed to be, you know, a role model to them. Like, I'm one of their oldest sisters. So is that really the best I could be doing? So then once I got those thoughts in my head, it was like there was no going back. There was no like going back to the life, like the glamour of porn. Like it was all taken away at that point. Like there was nothing good about it anymore.
So you really learned something about the importance of your family.
Absolutely.
As much as it annoyed you as a teenager.
Yeah, I almost never even knew it before this. Like because my brothers and sisters, they were on my side. They never were like, you're such a horrible sister, blah, blah, blah. Like, they were always on my side. So the fact that they could be there for me, like, through all of that seriousness, like, I was like, I owe them something to be better than that. Like, I should be giving back to them instead of taking more away. So.
Well, you're obligated to be you.
Yeah, that's true. It's true, but they are me. Like, they're part of me. So I had to. I had to show them that I could be way more than that.
And you're only 19. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about that way more that's coming down the line.
I mean, I think of myself as smart. Like, I have a brain. So the fact that I was in an industry where they think that I don't irked me. Like, I was like, let me just show you what I can do. So once I picked up my camera, I was like, this is what I can do because I can be creative. I can show the world to people who can't technically go out and see it. And I can really, you know, make something of this. Like, I can make a career out of this, a career that I can be proud of, my family can be proud of, you know, my friends can be proud of, like, everybody. It's just what I want to put out there. So now that I'm going in the direction of photography, videography, film direction, that's just what I want to be. Like, if anything could take over my life, I would want that to be it because it's my passion.
You know, a lot of the other girls in the movie who you encountered certainly don't have that support network back in Oswego like you have.
Right. And I was lucky for that. I really think that's what set me apart was that I didn't come there with issues. I came there with I have five brothers and sisters. My parents are married. I have, like, the best friends in the world. I had something to live for, but I went into an industry where they don't care if you have something to live for. You're just a body. I wasn't just a body. I have a soul. I have a mind. I have, like, so much to offer. So I just knew that that industry was limiting me, like, more than anything. But with girls who don't technically have that, they don't have a mom that cares. They don't have, like, a dad that's in their life. They don't have brothers and sisters that are always there for them. Like, maybe they just need to direct their energy in a certain direction. And if that's, like, a sexual direction or whatever, then maybe that's something that could be good for them. Or I don't know, technically, because every person's different. But some girls can handle it, but then again, I don't know if every situation is pleasing for anybody. Like, even people with issues wouldn't enjoy some of the situations that you're put in. Like, just because they're already messed up doesn't mean that more messed up situations are ever going to work. So a lot of girls that would go in with issues would come out with more. And as long as you're strong enough to get through them, you'll come out stronger. See, that's what happened with me. Like, I came in there not knowing what was going on, went through a lot of things, a lot of eye-opening situations. Like, it was almost like a coming-of-age type of thing where I just didn't know who I was, but I found it by going through the trials and tribulations of what I experienced there. So if I hadn't gone, if I hadn't seen all that, if I hadn't, you know, really been alone and, like, trying to find my way, then I don't think I would have, because I didn't have to when I was back in Oswego. I didn't need to. I was just a person there. But once
things were too comfortable.
Things were too comfortable.
It's just sort of like,
it was so comfortable that it was uncomfortable.
It was, like, boring comfortable.
Exactly.
It was like nothing's going to happen.
Nothing. Exactly.
So your original impulse wasn't naughty. It was reckless.
It was reckless.
Like,
yes, that's
brave almost.
I don't know if I was brave. I don't know if that technically, like, puts me in a brave situation, because it was just me trying to, like, leave. It really was, but it was the easy way out. So I don't want to sum it up to me being brave, because anybody could do it.
Are you still alone?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. And this is the first time in my life I've been okay with it. Like, I've always been the type of person, like, oh, man, I need someone to give me attention, or, like, I need to push my attention off on someone else. Like, I have too much blank space in here. Like, I'm thinking too much. I need someone to talk to all the time. But now I'm so happy that I can be this happy on my own. Like, that I don't feel the need to always be invested in someone. Now I'm invested in myself. I'm invested in my career. I'm invested in whatever dreams I want to accomplish. So I just, it's freeing. It's really freeing.
Relationships. Do you have any thoughts about what that's going to be like as you grow up?
Yeah, that's a tough subject because, like, I know what I want. I know what I want, and it sucks that I know the person that I could find it in. But in the situation that I'm in now, it can't happen. But, like, I have this, like, picture in my head of, like, what can be perfect, and it's always going to be there. But I know that this waiting and this time and all the stuff that I have to do in between this point and that point, it's going to make it that much sweeter in the end. Like, so I'm not rushing into anything like, oh, I need to be in a relationship or I need to find this person now. Like, I just know that the waiting will be worth it because I'll be in a better place and that person will be in a better place. So it's just like, it's just, I'm letting life happen now.
Are you saying that you're broken inside right now and that if you wait for a while, it'll fix?
I wouldn't technically say broken, maybe a little dented, but yeah, it's just like I know who I can be and what I can be and how much I can really do with myself. So I'm not going to settle for someone who doesn't see that because I want someone to know me. And someone right now, they'll know what I did or they'll know who I was or whatever. So they'll make a subjective opinion jumbled up of stuff that I don't technically want them to put on me just because I did it. Yeah, that it was me, but it's not technically me. So once I'm off doing what I really love to do and someone notices that, then I think that's like a way better time for me to be looking for someone. So right now I'm just like, it's like blinders, like, I don't need you, so I need myself. Now I realize that it takes time. Like, there's a reason our life is so long, because it's all steps towards whatever. You just have to wait. Well, you don't even technically have to wait. You just have to live. Like, living is really the only thing I can do. So I can't force it, so I'm just going to let it be.
Really makes you wonder what she's going to be doing in a few years. That's 19-year-old Rachel, one of the teenagers profiled in the new documentary Hot Girls Wanted. The film is directed by Ronna Gratis and Jill Bauer and produced by Rashida Jones. And maybe we will check in with 19-year-old Rachel in a few years. That's all for the Takeaway Weekender this weekend. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you here next time.
This has been the Takeaway Weekender podcast. You can catch all our show's content by visiting us at thetakeaway.org. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thetakeaway and follow us on Twitter using the handle @thetakeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.